With Shift Work, a podcast made in collaboration with RWCF and HRN, we're shifting the conversation about how the restaurant food you love makes its way to the table. Listen to and follow Shift Work on your favorite podcast app.
You are listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Akuaku. This season, we are showcasing stories from the inaugural class of Changing Narratives Africa Fellowship, a highly selective program for African food entrepreneurs who are ready to scale their brands into global markets. The organization's vision is to see proudly African food and beverage brands on the shelves of all the major grocery chains and e-commerce sites in the world, because they are high quality, healthy, and taste good. Here's this week's conversation. Welcome to another episode of Item 13. We're continuing our series with the Changing Narratives Africa Fellows. And today I'm honored to have on the show William Omamo. Am I saying that last name right? I'm very conscious
of saying people. Yes, very, very much so.
Right. Yeah. Great. Excited to share a little bit about your background, your story, your business. And I'm particularly interested because actually we started talking about this offline, but my first experience with like East African cuisine was actually when I lived in South Africa and I made a very good friend from Kenya who is married to a Ghanaian. And her comment was always that our food was always too spicy. So it's interesting to me that like, I have an East African entrepreneur here who's in the business of pivots. So this should be an interesting conversation. But welcome to the show, William. I'm thrilled to have you on. Mm-hmm. I think I want to kick off with you telling us a little bit about yourself, like where you grew up. You're calling us, we're talking today with you in Nairobi and me here on the East Coast in the US. Mm-hmm. If you could tell us a little bit about your background, where you were born, raised, like sort of where you've been around the world and how you ended up back in Nairobi if you've ever left.
Okay. Well, let me take this opportunity to thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to join you on this podcast, courtesy of Changing Narratives Africa. Had it not been for being a fellow of that community, I wouldn't have had this chance. But just to tell you a little bit about myself, I am a Kenyan thoroughbred. my parents are from the western part of Kenya. I come from a family that has been in politics since the independence of this country. And my father was a farmer and an agriculturalist, to put it that way. In fact, the first Kenyan to have a degree in agriculture.
Oh, wow.
So, so we, as a family, we came from this agricultural background. I went to some British schools here in Kenya initially, very good schools, may I say. And through that exposure, I quickly picked up this interest in food. And very early in my life, I decided that I wanted to get into the hospitality industry. Mm. So when by the time I was completing my A-levels, I knew exactly where I wanted to go. So it then became where to pursue the career. And at that time, as is today, the best country to do that is Switzerland. And I ended up in a college called La Roche Global Education, which today is probably the most prestigious of hospitality institutions in the world. Initially, when I was in primary and secondary school, I wasn't, a performer. But when I got to college, everything came together. Mm-hmm. I was in my element, and I really, really performed well in college. I had a fantastic college experience. So much so that the college eventually hired me when I finished my course, And I spent another 2 years, first as a trainer and then as a manager within the food and beverage department of the college. And that was basically was just a springboard for me because it set me up when I decided that I was coming back to Kenya. I came back as basically an expatriate, having negotiated my first job. I came back and, I quickly got into the flow of things in Kenya, having a bit of a cultural shock because I had never worked in Kenya before.
Yeah.
So the cultural shock, it was, I'd say, a rude awakening.
Yeah.
But somehow, I think, the general manager I worked for, we got along so well. I had a promotion within 6 months of that entry. And, I was over-promoted just because I was so likable,
I think that you also probably had something to offer.
Yeah, true. I mean, I was coming back with a wealth of experience, international experience. And I think that adds value when it comes to Africa. So in assuming those senior positions, I realized that I have, I'll call it entrepreneurship skills at that time because, I wanted to do more than the norm. I wanted to, get into events and organize and create stuff. I really enjoyed that. And I was able to, bring my team to a place where they were really very supportive. But, 2 years down the line, I just felt that I wasn't growing fast enough. Mm. I had already had this mindset that I was on such an upward trajectory that if I wasn't going to be general manager in 2 years, I needed to be looking around. So that led me to my first endeavor as an entrepreneur. I started up a pub called Bootleggers. And, I started this off without even doing a thorough feasibility study because had I really done a good study, it would have told me that, look, you want to start a pub in a pretty much the dominant religion there was not supportive of that kind of, business.
Yeah.
So that it didn't do very well, but a couple of years down the line, I realized that I did have some experience to offer, and I became a consultant, a hospitality consultant, which took me to Kigali, Rwanda. It took me to Lusaka. I did some work in Kampala, and it gave me an opportunity to experience hospitality in these other countries. But I eventually ended up in South Africa. And South Africa, it took me to a place where I was pretty much used to. I mean, a first world kind of, a social and business environment where I felt, I'm pretty much well placed to do well here. I joined McDonald's in South Africa. They had this fast track program to operations managers. They were opening 120 stores in 5 years, and they were really trying to open fast. And they were tripping over themselves because they didn't have a human resource. And obviously there was affirmative action, and they just couldn't find the right caliber of people. So I just found myself at the right place at the right time. And
that's interesting. I'm actually even trying to remember. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm trying to remember if I even saw McDonald's while I lived, and maybe I just wasn't actively looking. But and I'm like, wait, were there McDonald's in Jerek? Probably. I just probably wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, there are a number of them. Yeah. The double digits, I would say. So, but what McDonald's did for me was to really open my eyes into the world of systems, operational systems, corporate systems, and how you bring people to work with those systems. There's no better school to get that that other than McDonald's. Their system is just fantastic. And I think it's a great opportunity. If anybody is ever really interested to learn about systems, read about the McDonald's system. It's a great story. But anyway, I did that for 2 years in Joburg, and then I came back home just after general elections in Kenya. I came back, this is in the early 2000s, and I came back to serve a senior government official as his personal assistant, private secretary. And I did that for around 8 months, and then the guy passed away.
Oh my goodness.
Well, that left me thinking, now what am I going to do? You know? I mean, just to come and do this back in Kenya. And that obviously said, listen, William, just do what you know how to do best. So I got back into the hospitality. I worked with 102 casual quick service restaurant chains. I'll mention Steers because you do know Steers. I may mention a Pizza Inn in Score. I don't know if you ever encountered them. Yes, so I did some stints with them, realizing that, you know, my McDonald's experience was pretty advanced. And getting people to, you know, just appreciate and to open up and just to allow some new ideas is really difficult. In this part of the world, people are overprotective about, you know, their positions. And, so I said, oh, no. So I actually I got an amazing opportunity to work at the International Red Cross, and I joined them as a government liaison. They're looking for somebody who can, you know, be like a protocol officer for them. And do this, you know, government runs. And I just found that I could do that. And they gave me this job. And I held on to this job for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
I mean, totally. But, you know, with hospitality, you can go and apply it anywhere.
That's true. Yeah, and it's funny, as you shared your story, and I, you know, as I sort of know where you, the space that you're in now, it made me, especially when you talk about systems and McDonald's, and I think about a lot of young people now who sort of like, you know, like entrepreneurship has become this like cool sort of thing you must do or you should do or whatever, like be your own boss, et cetera, where, you know, people are sort of devaluing the experience of like going into a place where systems have been set. Well, because you could learn from like a lot of people. When I talk to young people, they're like, oh, I want to go to, but you don't, it's like, you don't know anything. And you see stories of entrepreneurs, like a lot of these entrepreneurs whose stories you see ending up on the cover of Forbes and whatever, even if they have not had a formal education, they've had their networks or their families or whatever, have the experience that they need to be able to set up, you know, what they need to be able to succeed. And it's like, it's good to have that entrepreneurial fire and instinct and passion. But ultimately, if you want to succeed, just listening to your background story, I'm like, yeah, I can see the building blocks to what has eventually led to what you're doing now. And I just wanted to point that out for those listeners, for those especially with entrepreneurial itch, that some sort of formal, you know, even though it seems we're chewing formal education or corporate training or whatever, that's those sort of skill sets, I think, should not be undervalued, underappreciated, underestimated.
I absolutely agree on, because, you know, when you become an entrepreneur, but you can become an entrepreneur and not have great vision. But if you're an entrepreneur with great vision, you quickly realize that you need to have a bit of corporate intellect, a bit of corporate exposure. And, you know, if you haven't had, you know, been had the privilege of being able to work in a world-class organization like McDonald's, you can still read up on it. You can still.
There's exactly. So it's that level of education, I think. Yeah. So actually, that's a very good point. And thank you for clarifying. So I'm not saying that you absolutely have to, you know, go and work in these places, but it's that idea of like educating yourself. You know, it's I feel like there's this narrative around like, you know, you're going to fake it till you make it. And I think that nuance of like constantly educating yourself, understanding things like systems, like marketing, brand, you know, supply chains, all of that is also important to becoming a successful entrepreneur.
So anyway, the reason why I was able to stay with the International Red Cross so long is because I was given this I was given this office, a title of the office was given, and I was told create this department, you know, you write what it's supposed to be, you know. So it was a great challenge for me because 1 minute I would be organizing for my head of regional office to be meeting the vice president. The next minute I would be at the counter of an immigration officer discussing how I could get visas for people. So it was so dynamic, it was so diverse. And I was also responsible on aspects of events and, you know, the hospitality arm of it. So, you know, I am somebody who must have diversity. And that job gave me a cocktail of things that I needed to do, which just kept me interested in the job for 8 years. But yes, you know, at some point it did start to get routine and I did start to itch for something else. And, you know, it was about 2008, 2009, the US aid had started a poverty eradication program around hot peppers, being that once this hot pepper has been dried, it is no longer, it can be stored for a long time. And then an ordinary subsistence farmer can use it for barter. That was the idea. You can take your barter to a designated kiosk and exchange your barter for, you know, the chili for sugar and things like
that. Oh, interesting.
That's how it worked initially. And it was for, you know, a small scale farmer who had an eighth of an acre, who was growing maize and beans, but, you know, decided that let me put something aside for a cash crop. So that's how it all started. And the USAID was working with an organization that had got contracts to supply this dry hot pepper to Germany. So I stumbled on this story and I liked it. I said, look, I've got some parcels of land doing nothing. I'm right on the lakefront. I have this big dream. I'd say 20 years ago, this big dream to have this amazing hotel facility, you know, resort on the lake. And so that was and still is a big vision of mine. But I said, in the meantime, I can grow some chili.
It's interesting to me, like I said at the top of the show, that because I said, like, my experience in the past has told me that East Africans are not into spicy hot peppers. So it's interesting but then I guess I understand from the USA perspective and incentive, like, why that would come to be. And also interesting that it was shipped to Germany, because I lived in Germany too, and I don't see them as a people that eat spicy food too. So that's all.
That's
pretty interesting. But I'm sure it went there for processing and probably was then shipped elsewhere.
It goes for processing. And, you know, if you look, you know, quite closely at a good number of commodities, you'll see a bit of a chili in So this stuff was being exported to Germany. So I got into that mix. I said, I've got some acreage. So I put down some crop. And I put down this crop along with others. You know, I started to grow amarantha. I put down popos.
Put tomatoes,
onions. So I did, you know, a horticultural project, or let me say a trial.
And this was was this a side hustle to while you were still working?
Yes.
Yes,
it was a side hustle. So when I did that, I quickly came to realize that, you know what? We live in the Bundus. We have wild animals. We have all sorts of wild animals that will just come at night and devour.
Oh, man.
Devour those crops. But the only thing they wouldn't touch was the hot pepper.
Oh, yeah.
So that was my big aha. Okay. Build this hot pepper.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
So I did, you know, the hot pepper was successful. Every other crop failed. But when these people in you know, came to collect my product and said that all they would do was repackage it and send it to Germany, I said, hang on a minute. What happened to value addition?
Yeah.
You know, what happened to processing? And they said, you know, it seemed like they weren't interested. And because I am fashioned in a way to, you know, to question and to interrogate, I realized that, look, I can add value. I mean, I have some culinary experience. I understand the mixing would take place and some of the critical ingredients that would enable production of chili sauces and chili paste. And I said, okay, let me do it let me try it out. And as I tried it, people liked this chili paste that I was producing. And I started to supply co-workers and friends. And eventually I realized that this can be a side hustle. So I got it passed by the Kenya Bureau of Standards, you know, the guys who decide whether you're going to give people poison or not. So then I started to do it as a cottage industry. I was just doing it out of my kitchen. It wasn't really big, but I was supplying a few, you know, shops. I would say I'd, you know, give out around 200 bottles in a month, and that, it was okay. And that carried on for a couple of years. I eventually did leave the International Red Cross when my father passed away. I don't know if you've ever, or if you're somebody who has ever read the Bible.
Yeah.
Because in the Bible, there's a story about a prodigal son.
It's
Luke 15, from verse 11, somewhere there. By the way, sorry, I have a lot of spiritual inclination these days, but not at that time. I'm basically trying to say that when my father passed away, I went to my mother and said, give me my inheritance. And she was kind enough to do that. And I took this inheritance and I said I was going to do what I'm passionate about. I was going to go and open coffee shops. I was going to open a pub. And I was going to, run a nice, trendy coffee shop and do a really nice, trendy pub. So I set about to do that. I did it outside of Nairobi. I did it in a place called Kisumu, which is in Western Kenya. And that basically gave me an opportunity to get back into mainstream hospitality after all those many years in the humanitarian, in the humanitarian field. So I got into that space. I opened these coffee shops because, you know, I was just fired up and I just wanted to be a pioneer of introducing coffee, you know, espresso-based coffee in this place, in this town that had all of these expatriates. And I imagined that, you know, I would have good business. And indeed, it was a good idea, but the timing was wrong because there was an election coming, and this place is very volatile when it comes to national elections. And unfortunately, I also did not have a family name that went down well. So that project.
That's unfortunately one of the challenges of doing business on the continent, right? Sometimes sociopolitical,
it is real. It is very real.
Can be very destabilizing too.
It is very real.
Yeah. But even anyway, the most well-resourced entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Kiki Luya, the Executive Director of Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Shift Work. In the last 6 months, some 6,500 restaurants have closed their doors, and there's never been a time when restaurants and their 12 million workers have been more vulnerable. It's time to transform hospitality. With Shift Work, a podcast made in collaboration with RWCF and HRN, we're shifting the conversation about how the restaurant food you love makes its way to the table. What does it really take to make that experience happen? And who are the countless workers responsible? We're talking porters, cleaning crew, prep cooks, servers, baristas, hosts, bartenders, barbacks, managers, sommeliers, and chefs. I'll also introduce you to organizations that are leading industry transformation. We'll discuss mental health, fair pay, racial justice, and how hospitality can change for the better. We need it. Listen to and follow Shift Work on your favorite podcast app.
But I did develop a really nice coffee shop concept. We did have some great unique dishes that we were dishing out, and the reception was great. The sauces that I had, of course, was my house sauce, which was also a winner.
Yeah.
At that time, I just called it K&K. That K&K was just the corporate brand.
What does it stand for, K&K?
It stands for Kahawa na Kadhalika. Now, that means coffee and other things.
Oh, interesting. Oh, you know what? I had a Kenyan on the show who owns a coffee brand called Kahawa 1893. She's based in the Bay Area in the U.S. Kahawa sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, so Kahawa is just coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... fast forward to where we are today. What basically happened is that when COVID came, I found myself in a situation. I was now working as a B2B program officer with one of the best hospitality schools in Nairobi, and I was a coordinator for, you know, developing programs for the industry that the college could sell, and it was a good opportunity. But of course, you know that COVID had a very devastating impact on the hospitality industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I lost my job, and when that happened, I had to go back to the drawing board and really ask myself, what can I do now? Mm-hmm. And what came into my heart was to commercialize this thing that I'd been doing for so many years.
Yeah.
You know, just to commercialize it, to make it a real enterprise, the chili pepper. For all those years, I only had a paste. I had never developed a sauce.
Oh, interesting. So what's your product range right now? Your product line.
Yeah, so today I've got four varieties of chili paste, from sweet, hot and sweet. I've got then various levels of pungencies on the paste, and then I have sauces, four variety of sauces. I have a classic sauce that is seedless. I have two other sauces that have some seed and have a sweet and hot. Now, what makes my product unique to the others is because the fruit that we use is exotic to our farm. You can't find it anywhere else.
Oh, interesting. I was going to ask you what peppers are you using?
Mm. Yeah. So we use a variety. It's a blend.
Okay.
So Because I also work with farmers and I have an outgrow program so that I do, you know, we work with the local farmers. I give them a set the seeds that are common. So they grow for me African bird's eye and long cayenne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we have our own a line that is a blend of Carolina Ripper and African bird's eye. It's a blend of Jamaican bonnet.
Ooh.
And long cayenne, and it really produces amazing fruit, you know, very unique in taste and flavor, and really pungent.
Wow, that sounds so good.
Yeah, we are definitely a distinctive chili brand when it comes to choice.
I usually ask this towards the end, but since we're talking about it, can you share where people can find it to purchase, or whether it's online or what are your distribution channels?
Yeah, well, we are online at the moment, but let me put it this way. I can be found on my website, which is www.knkpeppers.com. I'll send you that link.
Yeah, and I will include the link in the show notes and then also on social media.
Yes. And we do have a Facebook presence. We have Instagram presence. When it comes to online, the online platform that we have is called Jumia.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're on Jumia. We can be found there. And we're onboarding to a number of others, especially now that we are fellows at the Changing Narrative Africa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great opportunity to grow our brand and to get into some markets that we otherwise would not be able to do so. So my brand is called Apilo. And Apilo, it means pepper in East African Luo dialect. Mm. It means pepper. So
that's exciting. That's cool. Yeah, I'm a big fan of sauces, pepper-based sauces, and so I'm always looking for the next interesting, cool.
Well, I'm gonna get some off out to you. If you would allow, we'll send you a hamper. So that
thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Yes, I'm definitely, my pantry is full of a lot of African, and that's part of the reason I do this too, is one, I get to learn about new products, but then two, also on social, I share, well, not as much these days because I had a baby, and so like I've been less active on social. But my goal is really to show, like, even if you live in the diaspora, you can still have an African food pantry, right? And so I do. I get my sauces, and a lot of it actually sourced from my guests on the show. Uh-huh. So, so this is also helpful to me in that I get to diversify, like, my food choices at home. So,
well, Yom, I'm going to also be able to send you our hot honey. You know, we have honey that we infuse with a pepper blend. It's extraordinary. You have it on bread, you baste it. You can make amazing cocktails with it. It's really
sounds amazing. Thank you. So, thank you. Definitely. I will when I get it. When we can talk about that offline, and then I will share my creations in the kitchen with what I do with that. Cool. So outside of peppers, as you think about where your business is going to go in the next, I don't know, 2, 5, 10 years, do you foresee potentially adding other food products, spices, to your portfolio, if you will?
Yeah, definitely. We appreciate that the products that we have right now are basic. They're basic products that we can expand. For instance, we have a barbecue rub. And this barbecue rub it works well on meats. But we have an opportunity to develop barbecue rub for pork, for poultry. We also have what we call hot oil. So it's sunflower oil that is infused with one of our peppers, and you know, it's used as a salad dressing. It's used as a frying oil, and we've seen that it's just so popular.
Yeah,
and we can play around with that, but hot pepper has so many other uses. And as we grow, we appreciate that we need to maximize the full potential of pepper fruit. And pepper fruit can be found in cosmetics. It can be found in pharmaceuticals.
In cosmetics?
Yes. In fact, we already have a cosmetic line that is about to launch.
Whoa.
But since you're a foodie, I'm just going to stick to the food. But just to tell you that, we intend to diversify and use our hot peppers where it can be used,
yeah.
You know, security with the tear gas and with the pepper sprays.
Oh my goodness.
When we talk about how we want to progress beyond or bring what we're doing today into a totally different industry, is we want to develop into an agrotourism product.
Because
our estate we have an estate that is right on the lake. It presents an amazing opportunity to, you know, bring in a blend of the peppers, you know, open up a facility and create a story around our Apillo journey. Just like Tabasco have this amazing island, we also want to go the agrotourism route.
Yeah, that sounds great. And then for a place like Kenya too, I think that makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. Since you mentioned the estate, I want us to talk about that. I want you to describe for people, I think, let me double check, Utonga Pepe Estate is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Could you describe that for folks and like what,
in addition,
describing it and then also sort of some of the community work that you do?
Yeah, great. Yeah, so Utonga Pepe Estate is on in Western Kenya. We're on the shores of Lake Victoria. And it's a 15-acre estate that is part of a larger estate. And we have developed our peppers that are exclusively found in that region. The work we do with farmers is they grow the indigenous chili peppers so that they're not seriously challenged. And we basically have developed an outgrower program where they supply us with their fruits and we buy from them with the vision to establish a cooperative society so that they become integrated in the business itself. We have for many years been working with one of the local schools there that has makeshift boarding facilities because the girl child is really, really threatened there.
Yeah.
She's threatened with early marriage. She's threatened with unwanted pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
So she's very exposed. And, you know, in our interactions with these mixed schools, we realized that the school is the safe haven for them. So we have committed to develop the dormitories so that especially the girls, and not that the boys are not also under threat, because the boys who don't go to school end up fishing. And what fishing means is that you get on a boat, you go fishing in the lake, and half the time you're smoking what you call marijuana. That's all you do. You come back, the two fish that you've pulled out of the water, we used to buy more marijuana, alcohol, and have sex. So basically, we want to enhance the infrastructure of this school such that it can really become a safe haven for boys and girls, but do it in a way that even let that school also be secure. And as we do this, we want to set a standard for the local government so that the local government become encouraged to view the threat to our young girl, boys and girls as being real because of lifestyle challenges. The poverty there is basically one of the biggest threats to the security of these young boys and girls. So that's what we do. And we say that we for every dollar, for every $10 that we make in the export markets, $1 will go towards supporting this campaign.
That's fantastic.
It's amazing, and we thank God for that opportunity.
I'm trying to think of where I want to go. I'll come back to investment. I want to talk about Changing Narratives Africa. How did you find out about it? Because so far a couple of people I've spoken to have been based in Nigeria and just found out about the program through, you know, their own sort of networks. So how did you, based in Nairobi, find out about the program, and just, I guess, what has been your experience so far in terms of what you're expecting from it, and is it meeting your expectations so far in terms of how it's gonna help your business get to the next level?
Well, just to say it, you know, off the mark, the more you talk about your business or whatever you do, the more likely somebody's going to, you know, who can help you, is going to hear about it. And I have an old college friend. She also went to school in Switzerland, and we've kept ties. I'm actually the vice president of the Alumni Association, and I take care of Africa for the La Roche Alumni. So as part of this, of course, I'm always introducing my products. And this particular girl has, you know, she's known my story over the years. She is one of the best known women's rights activists in Kenya today, and which means that she does a lot of travel on the continent, you know, for conferences, for meetings. And through that linkage, you know, she came across Changing African Narrative, and she sent it to me, and she said, "Listen, William, this could interest you." And I took a look at it. I said, "Hang on a minute, I've never joined a fellowship. What have I got to lose?" So I, you know, I applied. And well, lo and behold, I got a response. And then I realized this is God sent. I need to pay attention. So I put all my efforts behind it. I told my story. I didn't need to create anything. I just told it the way it was. And it just kept on coming. And then, you know, they initially were 400, and we found top 15. And to
I didn't realize that that's how many people ended up.
There were two people from East Africa. We both happened to, one was a lady, and the other was both myself. We both happened to be doing, you know, something to do with sources. Mark you, I think that I had more variety than her. But I think that, you know, in the interview process, I was able to sell my story. And that gave me this amazing opportunity to get onto this fellowship. I had never been on one. And when I got on and I realized what Didi is doing, and Lucy Hopper, and, you know, the passion they have around making sure that we can tell our African story on those, you know, on the North America continent, in Europe, and in other continents. I was really inspired, and I realized that, you know, this opportunity, it doesn't come every day. This one has come for a special purpose. So I have grasped it with two hands. And, you know, it has been an amazing journey. Just the little... you know, we've only been on
this month, right?
A month. And already there's just been so much encounter, so much knowledge, so much learning that has really, really fired me up and helped me to understand that I can actually get my product into that space.
Yeah.
And this product has great potential to be appreciated in those markets. So I just cannot wait to, you know, to carry on and to go through the whole program, which is a 6-month program.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a 2-year as alumni. And I believe that within that period of time, Apillo would have gone to all corners of the world.
I believe that for you. Amen. I believe that for you.
Amen.
And this is a part of the reason, you know, I do this. I'm so inspired by all of your stories and the impact I know that all of you will make in the global food space. And it's an honor for me to be in this chair, to be part of your story. And getting it out there. So thank you for sharing.
Let me just bring something to your attention.
Sure.
You know, you may think that spices is not something that you would identify in East Africa. It's true. East Africans have not been known to eat hot, you know.
Yeah, that's my experience.
The West Africans are different.
Yes.
However, keep in mind that it is becoming a very small globe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a very small world because of internet, because of the global interactions and the Internet of Things, because the millennial generation, which I believe you're one,
mm-hmm.
are more adventurous. They're more willing to try. They're becoming more demanding. They want innovation and creativity, which means that even in a space like East Africa, we really need to be thinking out of the box when it comes to culinary experience.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've organized is the first Spice Fest in Nairobi.
Oh.
It's happening on the 9th and 10th of April. And the whole idea that I have is to bring to the fore what is happening around the world. People are embracing spicy food. And spicy food does not mean that it's hot.
Exactly, I was going to say.
It's spicy. And, you know, in the world of spices, there's adventure, there's discovery, there's delicacies, and there's also vitality. Because, you know, people want to, they're so conscious about what they're eating. But, you know, instead of having sugar, put cinnamon. Instead of salt, you know, the world of spices is evolving and it's growing. So my idea with this Spice Fest is to tell the spice story and to bring other entrepreneurs like myself, because I know how hard it is being an entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
to give entrepreneurs that space to showcase and to, you know, to have an opportunity to be creative and to introduce the publics into this variety of spices that you can enjoy. So that event is happening. I'll send you the links to it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I would be very interested in seeing it and then also sharing it with folks I know. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Since we're almost out of time, I'm just gonna touch on the last question. I guess it's a two-part question. One is, and you've touched on that a little bit in terms of like, what's next for you? What's your big sort of vision for your business? And you touched on, you know, the whole agrotourism idea. But for anyone that's listening, that's maybe a potential investor and looking at K&K Peppers, I guess I want you to tie the combination of your big vision and what an investor should be excited about as they think about K&K Peppers as a potential investment opportunity.
Well, thanks. I can tell you, you cannot meet the demand for chili. The demand for hot peppers globally, there is not enough being made of these hot peppers. And I'm just ever so excited that I'm in a space where I can work with local farmers. Mm. I can products that give us opportunity to introduce diversity. So in terms of the culinary arm of this enterprise, we are going to grow. We are going to introduce our products into other products, such as we can do jams, we can do peanut butters and all of that, where we can infuse these products and bring unique taste. We just want to dominate the space. When you see a pillow anywhere in the world, you're going to know that this a pillow comes from Africa. It is highly favored as a high quality table condiment and kitchen ingredient. That should give any investor an opportunity to say, hang on a minute, let me get involved with this, because these guys have a global vision, which we do. I am also of the opinion that if you want to go far, you go with others. And I don't want to think that I have everything that I need to go alone. In fact, I need to really engage global players who would bring in the much needed professional expertise and the global networks that we need. But looking into the future, this company is going to diversify into pharmaceuticals, into cosmetics and security, like I mentioned, because there are huge opportunities for that. But ultimately, we are also going to get into the tourism sector and embrace hospitality. So, and this should happen within the estate that I mentioned, because it is part of a larger estate that gives us an opportunity to really explore agritourism and hospitality. So that's what I'll
say. Yeah, that's just so incredible. I'm looking forward to the world opening up again and being able to finally travel to Kenya and hopefully make it up to
you. Have friends. You have friends.
Make it even to the estate, because I'm at a loss for words. I really truly I'm excited for you. Thank you. Working with Ndidi and the Changing Narratives Africa program, there's just so much. And hopefully you being on the podcast, the right people hear your story and are able to help you push for it somehow, whether they are customers or investors. That adds to the growing success of your business. We are at time, so I appreciate you making the time to speak with me today, William. I'm inspired by your story. I know listeners I'll share your information so those who are interested can get online and get products. I'm excited to try it too. Thank you so much, William, for being with us today.
Okay, and let me encourage you, Yom, to keep doing what you're doing, because it's a good thing. Do not get discouraged, ignore the naysayers, and just stay focused, because you must be in your element and you must be called to a purpose like this. So
my goodness, William, I have to say this. Even last night, and I'm getting a lot of these lately. I'm getting a lot of these, like God speaking through people to me, because to be honest, I told myself that this will be, and this is the first time I'm saying this publicly, that this would be the last season of the podcast, because I had committed with the Team Didi to do this, because I was going to end it last year.
Yes.
Because I had committed to Team Didi to do this. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. One last time, interview these fellows and I will be done. And as I was listening to your story, and I can even screenshot this to you, I literally just sent a message to a friend of mine as we were chatting that I'm just talking to this guy that's inspiring. Like, I was literally on the edge of quitting this podcast.
Wow.
And listening to his story reminded me of why I started to do this, And so thank you too for saying what was on your heart.
That is a word. That is a divine word.
Take it. Yeah. I appreciate you saying that.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.